Well, that's the new compassionate male. We're saying the same thing. It's saying, you know, we're talking about let's connect there and then let's integrate this. You know, we've got to integrate the divine feminine energy within ourselves. And I believe that what you're talking about, Patricia, not to put words in your mouth, but you're talking about activating the divine masculine energy within women and integrating that. And therein, with that combination, is the power. Excited about that because, I mean, we're not running on parallel paths. We're running on paths that are aiming towards something greater. We're aiming from our own vantage point and frames of reference. Right. We're aiming at the same thing. And that's what just, I love it.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis. And today on In Search of the New Compassionate Male, I'm the producer of this podcast. And we're here with Clay Boykin, the founder of In Search of the New Compassionate Male. Hi, Clay.
Hey, Dennis. How you doing? Well, I tell you, I am so excited to be here today. Patricia Farrow is our guest. And Patricia is a licensed master social worker. She's got 30 years experience. And she's got 3 books out. All of them, all 3 books have some reference to patriarchy. And what brought us here today is that Patricia and I are going to be on a webinar on October 3rd. And I want to give it a plug right now. It's called Death Throes of Patriarchy, Demystifying the Effects of Patriarchy on Women and Men. Patricia's going to be on it. Sandy Hart, who was here on the show a week or two ago, Ann Smith is going to be on it. Patricia, Ann, and Sandy, and Clay. And so I was going to reach out to Patricia because we really hadn't had a chance to talk with each other. And before I could reach out to her, she reached out to me. And we started talking, and we were talking like two magpies. And so we said, wait, stop here. Let's have this conversation. Let's get to know each other on the podcast. And so that's what we're going to do. Yeah. So here we are.
Patricia, what a time in the world. What a time in the United States. What a time here at the end of September of 2020. Can you give us a little bit of idea of what you feel that we are going through as a species, as we're going through as an evolution? I mean, I realize that's a huge term, but just where we are and give us some places where we can begin this conversation.
I'll start with my favorite mentor most of my spiritual life, and that is Jean Shinoda Bolen, said that we are in liminal time. We're in the time between the old world and the new world. So that's where we are. And my other male favorite mentor, Andrew Harvey, says we are here to actualize our divine humanity. So here we are, doing it together.
How exciting. Well, for so long, when Clay and I'm 72, Clay's in his mid-60s. And so when we were growing up, we both had the benefit of the white male patriarchy in the United States while we were growing up. We both had privileged environments. And even though we carried wounds in us that we did not from the patriarchy as we went through, but we didn't acknowledge them. And it wasn't until recently that both of us have begun on this journey to heal this part of it. And we want to be part of the conversation with women in seeing what we can create, what comes after, what we know the patriarchy is crumbling. We know that it's toxified and it's toxified all of us. So now we need to talk about what's next.
Right. One of the books that I wrote, I'm going to give you my two of my favorite titles because it's a fun way to start out. The first one is titled What Happens When Women Wake Up. And that's an extraordinary title that was given to me in meditation. And I'm just remembering I have a lot of mentors, I guess. A beautiful social work professor emeritus said, I said, what happens when we wake up? And she said, we stand up and we form a matrix of love and light that heals the planet. Okay, that's what we'll do. So it's been fun to be playing with that question for a really long time. And one of the things that I did as we were watching in 2018, all the women that were elected, and what was happening with the feminine. And I said to a friend, geez, I wish I had written a book titled What Happens When Women Wake Up. This was in 2018. And she said, why don't you do a second edition? And so I did. And what I did with that second edition is I interviewed about 20 different women, and I asked them, how have you seen the rise of the feminine in the last 10 years? And I got 20 different answers to what they've observed. And that's in the second edition. Mm. The other thing that I want to talk about, I'll veer off a lot, y'all.
Please do. Listen, we're wearing our seat belts. So we'll make sure you take left, right turns, U-turns. We're all in.
All right. So another book that I wrote called Sacred Marching Orders. And actually, I got a beautiful endorsement from Marianne Williamson that I'm going to read to you.
Please do.
Endorsement. But it's Sacred Marching Orders, Igniting the Solar Feminine at the Dawn of a New Age. Mm. And so here's Marianne's endorsement. Women owning our power and using it strategically and collaboratively is what our planet desperately needs. Yes. Sacred Marching Orders is a call to women to channel our passion into the healing of the world. So that's what I'm all about. And in my learning about the solar feminine, I also learned about a concept that I just mentioned briefly to Clay called the lunar masculine.
Tell us more. Now,
the lunar masculine is the activation. It's the activation of the heart chakra within the man, within the male. Okay, because as we know, under patriarchy, boys and men are given permission to think. And if they feel, it better be anger. It better not be anything else. So that necessity of being cut off from the neck down, except for, you know, maybe one other part.
Maybe one other little part, but we'll, yes, exactly.
Right. But the reclaiming of the heart is really the lunar masculine. And obviously that's what you two are doing.
It was so fascinating because I said, what's this solar feminine thing? You know, and as Patricia was explaining it, I was like coming out of my seat. I said, oh, well, that's the new compassionate male. We're saying the same thing. It's saying, you know, we're talking about let's connect there and then let's integrate this. You know, we've got to integrate the divine feminine energy within ourselves. And I believe that what you're talking about, Patricia, not to put words in your mouth, but you're talking about activating the divine masculine energy within women and integrating that. And therein, with that combination, is the power. Do I have that right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Under patriarchy, women have been given permission to come from our hearts. You know, we're loving, we're nurturing, we're receptive. We're, you know, that's okay under patriarchy.
Right.
But the lower three chakras, where the power is, the connection with the earth, the sexuality, the creativity, the self-esteem, red, orange, yellow, cut off. So the solar feminine is the activation of those lower three chakras, which is really where a type of power resides, a power in action. I think the real power is love. I think the real power is in the heart. But this is a time that we do take action on behalf of the planet and all of us.
I'm so excited about that because, I mean, we're not running on parallel paths. We're running on paths that are aiming towards something greater we're aiming. Yep. From our own vantage point and frames of reference, right, we're aiming at the same thing. And that's what just, I love it.
I do too. I do too. And Patricia, if we can, so if I understand what you're talking about, so this is the solar feminine. Mm-hmm. So we have we've had the ascendancy of the solar masculine, and now the ascendancy of the solar feminine and the ascendancy of the lunar masculine, so that we can join that, so that would work to be a complete system.
You know, it's interesting. I'm noticing your word, ascendancy, and I really want to bring in another word.
Please.
And that is deep rootedness in Mother Earth.
Thank you. I thank you, because there is so it's more of an integral or an integration than it is an ascendancy.
I would say that.
I like that better. That feels so much. Thank you for that clarification for me. So, because words matter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, the three of us are wordsmiths, and we have this. And one of the things that really, when we're talking about the lower three chakras, and especially what we're going through here with the passing of certainly Clay and I's hero, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg, but that one of the ways that the patriarchy continues is to control the means of reproduction. Mm-hmm. Control that is one of the big ways in order to keep it going and to keep. Can, mm-hmm. can you talk anything about that or share about that as far as the work that you're doing?
Well, that's an extraordinary concept, really. I mean, we see it, but I don't think I'd ever actually heard it said in that way, controlling the means of reproduction, which is fascinating, because we women are the womb carriers. We are the creators. We are creators, as you know, we create life from our body, from our womb.
Exactly.
So controlling reproduction is absolutely a fascinating way of describing a strategy, a primary strategy of the patriarchy.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here and repeat something that I'm going to get almost right. But it was, we go.
I love you, Clay.
So it may be more
He's
wrong
wonderful.
Than right. You know,
but, good.
Okay,
go
let's
for
try
it.
This. Well, I was told that the idea of men did not know where babies came from. I mean, women just had babies. And at some point in history, they realized that they had a part to play in it. And it was at that time that they said, oh, I've got power. I've got control over that aspect of it. And in some circles, that is one of the explanations of, you know, male domination and the root of the growth of the patriarchy. Now, that's a real stretch, and I'm repeating what someone else told me, but it sounds plausible to me.
I think it's an element, or at least for me. And then when private property, Code of Hammurabi, all of this began to happen, and one of the big questions that Clay and I are exploring and that we're doing is, what is the concept of enough? What does enough mean? And I want to ask people. I want to understand. Have we actually looked inside of ourselves and said, okay, I have a number. If I get this, it would be enough. Everything else, let it pour over the side. I'm not going to need any more than that. But I know what my number is. We don't seem to have that as a concept in our society. What enough is enough. Attention, enough. What? So, and that. Sorry, that was a sidebar. That let's go back to the subject. And
no. Because are you aware of? There's a book called Enough, written by a woman named Laura. I think it's Lori McCommons. I think her name is Lori.
Wonderful.
It's called Enough. So you might want to You might want to
come back. Thank you. Thank you for that sidebar. All right. So,
Can I go back?
Sure.
Go back,
please.
To what I said and what you said. Oh my God. It's getting fun. It's getting more fun already. There's an extraordinary book by Anna Dea Judith called Waking the Global Heart: Humanity's Transition from Love of Power to from the Love of Power to the Power of Love. It's extraordinary. It's evolutionary from the beginning. And one of the things that she says is that we all know we were matriarchal cultures originally. And then when we start, this is, I think, a pretty common perspective. Mm-hmm. Once we started doing agriculture, then we had more than we needed, then we needed to store, then we needed to protect and hoard, And so who controls the resources?
Right.
I think is a really, really important thing.
Yes.
And I'll quote Gloria Steinem. When I heard her speak one time, she spoke of what she called the commodification of women. And once we women became a commodity, then it's all about who controls the resources.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you. I so appreciate you saying that, Patricia, because that was where I got the controlling means of reproduction was from Gloria.
Oh.
From her work. And I got a chance to meet Gloria Steinem one time, and I've seen her speak a number of times, and she talks about this concept of controlling the means of reproduction and working in that. So and I love the work that you're doing through your books, through all of your amazing advocacy. What are the conversations that we men need to have with one another? Because we get to be in a place where you'll never be, which is men by ourselves.
It's so interesting that you asked that question. There's a piece, and I did bookmark it, and I probably will read it. I don't know if it'll be right now, and we'll see. In Sacred Marching Orders, where I present a concept about how the men can play this part in planetary awakening. And so I probably will in just a minute. But it's the idea, if men can step out of somehow, and we've got 5,000 years of conditioning, if men can somehow step out of feeling like their life depends on being one up, it's taught. I guess I just quote people a lot, because Jean Shinoda Bullen, I mentioned this, Clay, she said, and I think you were aware of it, when boys, with young boys, it happens as men get older too, if there is a weaker, more vulnerable male, he is attacked by groups of other males.
Yep.
Horrific.
Survival of the fittest.
Yeah. Yep. So the idea of if I'm not one up, I'm one down, and don't put me down there with those women, because, well, for one thing, hanging out with them is not all that safe because they get targeted a lot. So if somehow, and you said it, Clay, in our call with Ann and Sandy, and I guess we're talking hierarchy here, but you see, I'll say it anyway.
Please.
You said you see women as, I think you said higher, but maybe a little bit more.
Oh,
what I
said was, in general, and of course we're talking generalities, mm-hmm. I personally believe that women collectively have a higher level of consciousness than men.
Yeah. I agree. And women, I completely
so
agree.
I'm holding my hand up near the top of my head, and men are somewhere between my mouth and my chin. Okay.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah.
And so for us to be on the same plane, let's let the women come down to our level. I don't think so. We mm-hmm. guys have got to up our consciousness. Yeah. And that's
and what, up our game.
That's right.
Yes.
And we've got to and that's work that men have got to do with men, so that we can then engage in a conversation on equal terms from a consciousness level with women. And that's what I'm doing with our men's circle. It's a contemplative circle. Mm-hmm. It's different than the regular men's group. Mm-hmm. We're not.
And I know, I know the resentment. I understand the resentment in the sense that we white men, especially the we white men of privilege, are now having to compete at the same level that women and minorities have had to compete, have compete all along. So we're having to actually up our game. It's not a question of letting anyone in. It's a question of the year I was born, the Detroit Pistons won the NBA title. It was 12 white men.
Wow.
I just wonder how that team would have fared against LeBron James and the team. So this is, it isn't a matter of hire. It's a matter of we have to up our game.
Well, let me do, go
please.
Ahead.
No. You're going to read that?
Let me read you this.
Please.
Because I think it's really, really interesting. It's from Sacred Marching Orders. The lunar, so we talked about the solar feminine, and then the lunar masculine as well is different than a man who simply takes on the more negative feminine qualities such as passivity, ineffectiveness, lack of initiative, and dependence. And this is Celia Fenn who coined the solar feminine. The lunar masculine is gentle, nurturing, and caring. Many teachers tell us that it is time for men to move into their hearts. This powerful heart energy has been denied to men during this 5,000-year patriarchal era. The head or intellect has been welcomed and honored, while the heart has been completely denied. It is time for men to move into their hearts. Our planetary future requires it. And I'm going to read just a little bit more. Men and women, both balanced and grounded in their lunar and solar aspects, is the direction in which we are headed. This is much more healthy in both genders, functioning with a limited skill than both genders, functioning with a limited skill set and depending on the other gender for balance. And then I wrote, finding balance by marching in circles. All this talk about the lunar and solar feminine smacks of wholeness and balance. If I'm writing a book to put the solar feminine on the map, why do I keep going back to the lunar? The answer to that question is multifaceted. It sets my head to spinning. There are so many aspects to this that I'm going to begin by moving into a free association mode and write whatever pops up. What is valuable to understand about the ideal balance between the lunar and the solar? The lunar has been here for thousands of years. As women, we access this readily, the heart. The solar only showed up on the planet in 2005. Most of us are only beginning to know about it and embody it. Because we, as women, are unfamiliar with the solar, we habitually move into the lunar default mode. The planet is in dire straits, and passionate, powerful, effective action is imperative. Now, here's what's coming. The lunar, this is a very different concept. The lunar holds the space, and the solar takes the action. It's reversing what we're used to. The solar embodies the activation of the lower three chakras, which includes being deeply connected and grounded in Mother Earth, passion and creativity, and a strong sense of personal power. Some teachers tell us that now is the time to pass the baton of powerful heart activation to the men. Living from the heart is something women have mastered. It is now time for men to be centered there. These same teachers have discovered that power, and this is an indigenous teaching I've heard, is the natural birthright of women, which we relinquished under patriarchy. Access to the heart was relinquished by men under patriarchy. This section was originally titled Circles and Teams. What does all this have to do with circles and teams? Early in the book writing process, I repeatedly came across the phrase circles and teams, such contrasting concepts. Also, the phrase marching in circles surfaced over and over again. So then I wrote circles. Circles have tremendous value. They create and hold extraordinary power. Wisdom is spoken into and invited by circle energy. Women who have been invisible under patriarchy see one another into visibility and hear one another into our voices in the circle process. Circles embody unconditional love and acceptance. Circles nurture. Women deeply connect with each other in circles. Now I've got teams. Inherent in teams is the unified action toward one goal. Team members work together and channel resources and support to the team member who has the best potential for reaching the goal. Teams strategize. They create plans of action to realize their mutual goals. They practice alone and together. They remain focused on their goals. Fascinating contrast between circles and teams, but can they come together? Now, let's explore marching in circles. What can this mean? Marching is a single-pointed forward movement, usually performed in unison by a group of people with a common goal. That's clear enough. Circle. A circle is around something, maybe even an empty space, with no clear beginning or end. We all feel that a circle is a powerful symbol. The last words my sister Neen spoke before she died were, "The circle of love is never broken." We know circles are powerful, as is marching, but how do they fit together? At this point, I have a few clues. One, the planet is round. Do we march forth in circles? Do we take the wisdom and unconditional love from the circle process and carry these qualities into the march? Both circles and marching embody unity. And here's in bringing these ideas together. Men hold us in their hearts, parentheses, the circle of love, as we march forward in powerful unified action and focus as a nation of women. Llewellyn Vaughn Lee writes, "The role of men is to protect women in this work, to value it, and to consciously protect it. The role of the masculine is as protector, that you," this is Llewellyn talking, "men, honor this work that is being done by women and don't allow it to be interfered with." How will that get played out? I don't know. There are so many negative forces in the world that don't want this work to be done, that don't want the world to be activated again, and that oppose women, and that oppose having the women regain power, because women's power is decentralized. It's organic. It cannot be manipulated. It cannot be controlled. It is life. Vaughn Lee states in his quote, "How will that get played out? I don't know. A powerful awareness arises in me in response to that question. It gets played out by men moving into their hearts on a global scale. We think of men as protectors, but especially under patriarchy, 99.9% of destruction and harm to us and the rest of the planet has been done by men. The twofold process of moving out of this dominator, destroyer mode and being and moving into the hearts serves the purpose of protecting us and propelling us forward in a circle of love. So marching in circles is marching forth enveloped in the love of the men of heart who encircle us in the circle of love." There. That's my answer.
Well, I think, Clay, we've got our marching orders.
Yeah. And I tell you something. I think we're on the right track. When you're talking about the circle, and there's so much power in the circle. And what I also heard was, guys, don't leave your head behind and just go to your heart. No. But that's what the perception is. You know, the guys hear, well, you got to get to your heart, get to your heart. It's an either or is what we're hearing. Mm-hmm. And that's not what you're saying. That's not what's being said. And that's what we're working on in our circle, is to connect with a heart and then find the vocabulary amongst men, because we haven't exercised that heart muscle to speak it. And that's what we are practicing in that circle. It's a nurturing environment. There's no judgment. Nobody's trying to fix anybody, and we get do-overs, you know? So it's a very safe, sacred container.
Patricia, the healing aspect of, I love what you said there about we as men can protect while the women rise and lead. I love that because it really gives me something to do. This gives me an opportunity because one, my teachers going all the way back to have been women. Back into the spiritual, I mean, people like Mary Baker Eddy and Emma Curtis Hopkins and this all through that. I mean, there's just this extraordinary resource of women that have come to lead me. And I am learning I have a role I can protect, and then while this nurtures, the same way that I would protect a plant as it's making sure that it's getting its root and it's getting it, where I'm protecting it so that it can truly get there and blossom.
Dennis, when you use the word protect, my mind goes to a warrior. And we got to figure that part of it, of the language out, because I don't think that's what, I don't think, Patricia, that's what you're saying. I had a group of guys in Kenya, and I said, you know, you guys have gone through your rites of passage, which is horrific. Every one of them. As a matter of fact, I asked them, I said, how many of you in this circle has gone through initiation school where they're publicly circumcised and then they're going through an ordeal of training, where yesterday you were a boy and you could talk to your mother, today you're a man and you no longer talk to your mother. So they're really ingrained in the patriarchy. And I said, guys, you're going out there with one hand tied behind your back because you're holding down this feminine energy. It's in your heart and you've got all these layers to protect it because you're told to hold that down so that you can be that warrior. You see? The protector.
Yeah.
I said, you know, you got to release that because you're wasting energy doing that. Open up so that you're going out there and maybe you've got the sword in one hand, but you've got the hand of compassion, the other hand, you're holding the hand of compassion. And then together, you're fully integrated. And that's a continuum so that you can protect with heart.
Protect with heart. Yeah. I think warrior is a tricky word. The goddess that she most identifies with is Freya. Well, Freya is Odin's wife, and she is the goddess of love and war. And we do have, you know, I'm not into violence. I'm not suggesting that at all, but there is something about warrior energy that it doesn't have to be violent.
No, right. It doesn't. But that's where Clay and I are talking about. What if we were merely to change the word police to peace officer? So that every single that there was the mindset, because there's a different mindset when I use the word police than I use the word peace officer. So yes. this is what we're talking about is that we're here to as warriors to maintain the peace so that this solar feminine can rise and lead us.
And it's not blocked. It's not blocked by these forces, you know, that are invested, you know, like you talked about the, you know, controlling reproductive rights.
Yeah. Okay, so and that's where it gives us that warriorness.
Okay, so help me out here. I'm going to be the protector, so women can lead. I think that's almost an either or, but what I'm hearing you say is a yes and. So help me understand that.
You know, I just had a thought. Children that are young and vulnerable require protection as they grow. Mm-hmm. And that's what parents do. We protect our children. There's nothing violent about that. And a child won't grow without protection. So I think that it's definitely in tandem. It is so in tandem.
Exactly. If we protect the rights, what I hear from you, or what I hear, and see if you if this sounds correct. If we are protecting the rights, if we protect equal rights, if we protect the opportunities for women to be able to, that they're rising up, because we're the ones in power. We actually have the power, it requires us giving the opportunity, and giving the opportunity to be able to share at the level and to share that power. It's not a question of, because I have so many things to learn if I do.
Mm-hmm. You know, right. And the typical response, and I've been guilty of it, because I was in the corporate world for years, and it was like, okay, if she gets the job, I don't get the job. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. if we give women power, then that means I'm going to lose power.
Yep.
That's not what's being said.
Nope.
Because we're both rising up, and we're both bringing something greater than either one of us could bring up.
Yep. Exactly. There is either the principle of zero sum or there's synergy. Yeah. And we three understand the principle of synergy, that there is plenty. There is so much that there is plenty that we and how desperately this planet needs this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nature is such a beautiful example of that. You know, if you look at an oak tree, I mean, how many baby oak trees are in those acorns? You know, I mean, there's
yes.
abundance is the lesson in nature. It's, you know, that's a map for us.
You know, it just occurred to me. I go back to my corporate days. And, you know, we were in electronics industry, and there were industry associations where the competitors who were warriors, who were at each other's to grab the market share, to win over this, that, would come together to grow the market. And that's a standard strategy. So mm-hmm. we know that if we work together, even though we are competitors, but if
yes.
if we come together and we then together, there's more for everybody. Now, why can't that concept be brought into this relationship that we're talking about with the collective women and men?
Are you noticing, Patricia, that there are more conversations happening than have happened before, that we're making progress in this, having the conversations are you optimistic about where we are right now, even with all the challenges that we have?
Yeah, definitely. It was a long time ago. Blessed Unrest, Paul Hawkins, I think. You know, all the NGOs that existed at that time, it was a long time ago. So all the people that are doing extraordinary work, that's not on the news, extraordinary work within themselves, their own evolution, but also in their communities and
yes.
with the climate. You know. So all of that is happening, and it's expanding exponentially. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to add on to that, because as I'm going out with the podcast, it's lighting
up.
In search of the new compassionate male. There are men's groups out there. There are podcasters, and they're talking. They may not be using the word compassion, but they're mm-hmm. doing their work, and they're representing the same thing. And you know, my goal is to bring every one of those podcasters onto this show, and me go onto their show, and have a network. You know, mm-hmm. because we, as you said, this message is not getting out.
Yeah. I love the way you use the word network, because when we think of the trees and the fungus that connects everything, there's an internet underneath the ground that the fungus has is one cell at a time connecting all the trees and helping others. One tree will give to another tree to be able to. I'm not talking airy fairy stuff. I'm talking this is
the real deal.
The science that we understand of what's happening there, so that we're getting an opportunity to learn from that.
Absolutely. Yes, I have a very dear friend whose work, her name is Phyllis Karat. She's she was one of the first out Wiccan priestesses, is a New York attorney as well. And so much of her work is about how we learn from nature, that nature is a map for us. And she has so much to teach us.
Yes. Oh, it is so interesting to see what a polymath you are. Patricia, because I just love the fact that you have such curiosity and you have such a light about this work and about what you are doing. Are you a regular, in your own process of gaining peace when you get off center and when you go back, how do you return to it, and how do you keeping your balance at this time of great tumult and change?
I've been doing inner work for a long, long, long time, and very intense, very intense. And so I have done so much of my own shadow work, so that a lot of those obstacles, you know, wounds, different parts of myself that have been hard to look at and hard to come to terms with, I've done a lot of wrestling with my demons. Yeah. So demons being the dark parts of myself, my wounds. Yes. So that's a big piece. I've also been meditating for years. I also do a process that I've been doing for years. And that is, it's really just a writing, an inner dialogue. So I connect. Actually, now I'm calling it a switch all the time. I put at the top of the page, divine discourse in the morning. So I communicate my own internal divinity, and I experience a shift in my body. I feel my energy moving down into my solar plexus, and I really shift dimensions. And I've gotten so I can do that pretty
consistently. Do you find yourself when you're writing that at some point you're observing your hand and pen go across the page?
You know, it's so funny that you say that. I read somewhere, I think I know who that was too, that wrote, said it doesn't matter, that the writing with our hand is so important because our hand and our heart are connected. And so I definitely do that very conscious being in the moment observer piece. Yeah.
Sure. I actually get to this place where I'm not controlling the hand.
Uh-huh.
It's channeling. It's happening.
Right.
It's a download. In the writing, are you familiar with Lucia Capriccioni's book, The Power of the Other Hand? And she talks about writing with one's non-dominant hand.
Yeah, I have that book. Yeah, Recovered the Inner Child.
Yes, and boy, what an exercise that is to allow yourself, for me to allow myself to use my non-dominant hand. I was so taken by it that in my corporate world, I would have my staff meetings. And these are all engineers, and I'm not an engineer, so they could talk over my head anytime they want. I would take notes with my non-dominant hand, with my left hand. Mm. And they'd be back and forth and back and forth, and I'm just letting this flow. And you know, there's more times than not I would sit up and go, wait a second, this is what you're talking about, now draw it up on the board. And they go, yeah, that's what it is.
Yep.
It was just opening up that channel, opening up the heart and allowing it to flow, because I'm not using my traditional male in the boardroom type thinking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What were the gender dynamics in those room of engineers? What was the gender ratio?
Maybe one woman.
I wonder, see, this is what I wonder is that, because when we begin to balance these boardrooms, these engineering rooms with men and women at a closer level to how they were represented in the, do you think the conversations are different?
If they have training that's brought to their awareness that we're going to move forward differently. Again, going back to my corporate experience, I was a change agent. They would bring me into organizations that were sick, couldn't put their finger on it. And if the head of the organization would let me do what I wanted to do, to ask questions, then I would help cultivate a change in the culture without standing up there and going, we're going to change the culture. No, don't do that. But it was all about an engineering organization in this case, finding heart and bringing heart into that organization. And we took multi-million-dollar organizations and doubled their size. And all that changed was we started to engage the heart in the business.
That is wonderful. Patricia, what have we not talked about that you want to make sure that we talk about in this first hour? What's on your head and heart?
Let me think. I think I want to talk about something that is, I'm just making it up, a signature skill of mine that I call fierce listening. And it's a model that I created that is a roadmap for listening very, very deeply to the other person. And you guys are both really good listeners, but there's, oh yeah, absolutely. But there is magic in listening. So, I've been a therapist for 30 years and, listening is my, what do you call it? Trade. That's what I do. Yeah. All day long, really. More than that, but that's something that is foundational. So I think the power of listening, and I think that when we listen, when we really, really listen to one another, the other feels safe enough to speak from their hearts.
Yeah.
We used to do this thing called essence-to-essence communication, and I had a little roadmap for that, and that is one person spoke from their heart, they said what they felt moved to say. The other person held the space, had the container. When they could feel that the other person was done speaking, then they said exactly what came into their heart, back and forth, back and forth. And what I discovered, we got a triad here, is that when that happens, spirit moves in and we follow spirit.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I could say a lot about that. Holding sacred space for someone is something I learned as a prayer chaplain, which is deep listening and allowing that person to release whatever it is and hold for them the fact that there's a divine spirit within them. They can't see it right now, but I'm holding that. And I'm being totally present. I'm holding space for them. The other thing is, in our Monday evening circles, there's been times when I've said, okay, guys, when one person speaks, count to three before the next person speaks. And when the next person speaks, pick up on something the previous person said. And that takes them out of this mindset of, I wish they'd stop talking so I could put my point in there. Now, we're really pretty good, but you can imagine 20, 25 guys in a circle and one person speaking and he stops and there's quiet and then another person speaks So it so supports what you're saying.
Yeah. Gosh, yes. Oh, Patricia, thank you. Thank you for giving us this time today. And thank you for all the wordsmithery that you're doing that I'm going to be reading in your work, mm-hmm. and allowing that to come to, through you, because what mm-hmm. you're laying out is the validation for everything that Clay and I are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Every single piece is so clear that what we have been walking through and so is being validated independently and dependently and interconnectedly by you.
Oh, wow.
And all the work that you're doing. And that is so heartening, because we feel heard. We feel mm-hmm. like you, Patricia, is walking the same things, coming to the same awarenesses, learning the same lessons that we're doing. That is so validating. It feels so good.
Because you are pioneers. You're pioneers. This men's work is new. And so you're in uncharted territory.
That's why we need you. That's why we need your maps, and we need your pioneering, and you need your walking with us. Well, thank you, Patricia. Clay, thank you again, my dear love, Clay, who has brought me along on this journey in search of the new compassionate male. And Patricia, our friend, we know you now and love you, and so glad to have you, the opportunity to be able to share this time with you.
Thank you. It has been extraordinary. Thank you.
Thank you, Clay. All right. Thank you, everyone that listened, and we will see you again in search of the new compassionate male.